Good evening. Please press star 6 to unmute yourself. What shall we look at this evening?
It's Carolyn Ashwini.
Carolyn and?
It was Jen.
Jen. Okay, Carolyn. Carolyn, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. I guess what I've been really, I've been having an experience of, and the only way I can think to describe it is I didn't know until I was 16 and failed my vision test when I went to get my driver's license that I was very nearsighted. And I can still remember the afternoon that I got my new glasses and just walked around in awe and wonder
mm-hmm.
at what
mm-hmm.
I was seeing for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm having that same experience that I can't put words to it, but it's just it's like fall down to my knees in gratitude, kind of that it's such a miracle to be alive.
Mm. Yeah. So I project with what you were referring to as the analogy, which is the 16-year-old experience, right? So you fail a test. And it could be the most devastating thing ever. But it leads us, that devastation leads us to the awareness that there's actually the wrong lenses being used here to view the world, right?
Yeah.
And so then we get you a pair of lenses, and suddenly something that you didn't even know was missing, that you just saw the world the way you saw the world because you had no information that the world could be seen in a different way.
Yeah.
And here you are presented with these new lenses, and suddenly the world looks like a completely different place. And there's the ability to see the world and wonder at it because you can see the world.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's not, however it looks like to a nearsighted person, when the lens is corrected, then there's the ability to see, and there's such gratitude for what can be seen as a consequence of having those lenses. And I project that you're relating that to an experience currently in your life where with practice or with insight or whatever it is that you're pointing to, that's your experience. And I'm projecting wildly here, right, that in a situation like this, perhaps something that was not in awareness is brought into awareness and a different perspective is available. And from that perspective, there's so much to see, and it brings us to that place of tremendous gratitude or whatever it is that caused us to first be aware, and then second, to have the sight to wonder and be in awe
yes.
with the universe, right?
Yes, yeah. And just so grateful because it's what the experience I keep having over and over is it's like being thrown into the fire to realize that what's being burnt isn't you, or what's being burnt isn't what is indestructible, and just being having such an opportunity to have that experience over and over again.
Uh-huh. I think I was following you, Carolyn. But a lovely other lovely analogy for what we're in, right, that we get thrown into the fire, and what burns away is what can be burnt away, and what is left is indestructible. It's the rare transformation of the monastery wall that process assists, that crucible assists us to get in touch with that which is unchanging.
Yes.
And whatever the experience experience of being burnt is something we learn to welcome.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like an annealing process, or like a diamond being formed under pressure, or whatever analogy we want to use there.
Yeah.
That something exquisite comes out of that process of something very indestructible comes out of that process of pressure or inspiration.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carolyn. Jen.
Ashwini, can you hear me? Jen? Yep. You can't hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was seeing, you know, similar to what was being spoken about, in the sense that just all the millions of applications of practice and analogies and everything that are just ripe right now. And I saw just the power of awareness and how much, well, just everything. So here's what I saw. So washing hands. And, you know, we always wash hands a lot at the monastery, but we're washing hands more even now and longer, right? So washing hands is, you know, a bit of a project. It's a commitment, let's say that. And I watched how I just saw this very subtle ego process today that was like, I'm over it. And how if I didn't catch that, that to me, right there in that single tiny thing, is how everything gets taken from us, it feels like, in our lives. I don't want to do that anymore. I'm done with that. That's old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really and to takes be able us away from the being in the moment and the beginnings conversations we've been having in all our morning shows, right?
Yeah, perfect connection. Perfect connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, how many people are going to start having that experience? Right? Because human beings don't do well with staying with something.
Yes.
Especially if they don't have a process to assist. And so just seeing, again, it's another perfect example of how that kind of thing that's happening for us all the time, all day long, every day, that we think is whatever, you know, benign. And that thing that Sherry says, it's all life and death. And that's such a perfect example of, as people, quote, get tired of whatever they're doing, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's such a perfect example of how it truly is life and death. Either the human being's going to have the life or ego's going to have the life. And in that tiny little movement is the choice.
That's right. Well, and, you know, if we can explore that a little bit more, right, Jen, as you said, it's the awareness that is makes all the difference, because what we need to be is present enough to see that come in, and regardless of how I feel about it, and this is where our training kicks in, is to wash my hands anyway. I've had that process with flossing teeth now for several years, right? That you have to watch it, no matter how, there is resistance to the process, it comes in all of those ways. And that's another interesting.
Ashwini, I don't know if it's me or you, but you're getting a little
hard. Where's the virus anyway? Whatever, right? Whatever it can throw at us. But to recognize it as a process of leeching energy, leeching momentum, leeching enthusiasm, leeching the ability to be new, right? That to be present, and to watch that as the process that takes away from, well, what would I be doing other than washing my hands in the moment?
Truly.
Right? Yeah.
What an excellent point. I'd be doing what I feel like doing, which translates to what ego tells me to do. And it doesn't feel like that. You have to pay really close attention to actually experience that. But that is what's happening.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I love your point that I love your point that human beings have a hard time sticking with things, right? I mean, whether it's washing your hands enthusiastically.
Ashwini, you're cutting out, and I don't know if it's me or you.
If someone thinks it's me, would you unmute yourself and let me know?
Yes,
you're
cut out for me.
You are winning.
Okay, well, I'm trying. I don't have any other option other than this.
I can. It's sometimes I can hear you perfectly. Other times, really not at all, and then somewhere in between. Other, it's kind of like life.
Okay.
But I let's see.
Well,
I lost. Yeah,
let's,
go for
let's
it.
Go, and if not, I'll switch to the computer.
Okay.
So the statement that you just made that it's human beings can't stick to something is so true because we can see the ego process that comes in to talk us out of it. It has a certain shape. And for each of us, you can almost track. I'll be enthusiastic for the first 5 days, then I'll force myself to do it for the next 5 days.
Right.
And if I don't go past my 10, it's not to train ourselves to the threshold of that place and go beyond it.
Yeah, yeah. So you cut out a little bit, but I think basically you were laying out the steps of how of the stages of what happens, and the brilliant training is to be able to train to go past the threshold, which is basically the threshold of control. And so it's huge for us to go past that threshold. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, we can watch it. We can watch it. We can map it. We can map it in different populations around something like being being able to wash your hands because of a threat to how I keep a fitness routine, right?
Exactly. It's so good. There's so much to see. There always is, but there's so much to see. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen.
It's Bill. Margaret.
I heard Phil, Margaret, and who was there? Who was before Cheryl. Phil? Cheryl.
Jane.
Okay.
Sarah.
All right. I'm going to write this down. But let's start with Phil.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just love that conversation because what I saw in it, and I think you probably said it too, but what I saw in it was that if you don't catch that first step of I'm over this or whatever it is, that it seems to me what would happen for me anyhow, at least right now, say with washing hands or whatever, is that I'd go ahead and do it, but I wouldn't know, you know, if I missed that first voice or that step, suddenly I would be doing it begrudgingly or not happily.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I heard people say that to me, like, okay, so they're having to stay in their houses. And this person said, I'm over it. And I said, and are you going to go out? No. But she's all in a grouch about being in, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, I think like you were saying, it just really leeches the energy out of it. And most people don't even know what's going on.
That's right. And, you know, Phil, that's how the joy goes out of our lives, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And we become identified with poor ER, but I'll use that image, that when I get to the places of what you're pointing to this person is, we're super identified with ego, and we're nothing but dissatisfaction with how things are. And so from dissatisfaction, the energy of action is so begrudging and so negative and so as if the world is owes me something it hasn't delivered, right? Whereas if I'm here and not identified with that, with dissatisfaction, everything is a pleasure. I'm happy to wash my hands. I'm happy to wash my hands for my hands, for everyone else who benefits from washing my hands. From me washing my hands, it's just a much more open, expansive, and joyful place.
Exactly, and to have the luxury to be in a house and to be able to look outside and see the beauty. I mean, it's just so joyful, and I'm feeling so grateful, and yet I know that, you know, for myself and any people that could be drained away, and you know, if we're not just really on top of what's going on.
That's right. We notice how that drain happens. And when I notice I'm being grouchy, that's what I train myself to reach the recorder and talk about it so I can make the movement back to presence, right?
Grouchy. Exactly.
And I don't mean that we can't get irritated or, you know, have those experiences. I just mean that there's a difference between being a dissatisfied, identified human being versus being a disidentified human being.
That's right. And a lot of times we can use grouchy as and step back into it, like either with the recording or whatever, to see where it started from if we missed it. You know, if we missed that first movement of I'm tired of this or whatever it is.
Right. Because as we are fond of pointing out, behind grouchy, if we pick up the recorder and explore that, we'll actually find the process that's working on the human being that is getting them identified, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Then the
energy comes back, yeah. And I just wanted to say something else, too, and that is, you know, of course, we've got sisters all over the world, and it's so amazing, you know, to get an email from somebody in South Sudan, you know, saying we're having to shelter in place and, you know, this, that, and the other. It's kind of what Jen was saying about our you know, our project, our people. But that everyone all over is doing the exact same thing at this point. I mean, and just the sense of the global community and how we really are all in this together is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And to me, it's always a wonder that it takes this level of raising the stakes for us to see what is so all the time to be so all the time, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And I think just above all, just to be just so grateful because, I mean, you know, that's all we've got, gratitude, love, you know, because that's all really all we've got.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I think Margaret was next.
Hi, Ashwini, and everybody, Sangha. I am so grateful for practicing gratitude, for this practice of, you know, of practicing gratitude, because I now have that, you know, and I see so many people with it. I mean, only in that it seems like I'm focused towards, you know, activities like walking outside in my neighborhood where there aren't very many people out walking, but there are people, and they all seem very grateful for that experience of being outside and just so much freedom that we do have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To live our
lives. And it's hard. It's hard not to feel grateful when you're present to sunshine and beautiful spring flowers and gorgeous trees, right? And there are two levels of that, right, Margaret? That I'm not sick. I'm not one of those people who is having a hard time, as a lot of people are. And so I'm present to that experience and grateful for what I do have. And there's the other place of when I'm present and I'm really here, gratitude is my experience, because I'm not in some negative conversation talking about what's not going well, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what I was looking at around what's been so oh, just amazing for me in this beginnings that we're looking at in the annual retreat is that it feels like for me, what I started to feel is this kind of an emboldened way of, it feels like I'm more, well, that's the best word, emboldened to show up, to begin something. And today I saw this, I also had a reflective listening buddy support call, and I was noticing how it's like ego has control over me, it has had more control over me when I'm doing what I would call, you know, showing up one-on-one in practice or showing up in certain ways where I have to, it feels like the control is that ego's telling me I have to be prepared. I have to really have looked at what we're doing and know what I'm going to say. But around reflective listening, I can just show up and be whoever I am in that, you know. And it feels like letting go of that trick of egos or that belief of egos around I have to monitor how I'm going to be in essentially the same situation, that I can just be myself and show up. It's so emboldening in terms of showing up to do the project I want to do that I've been tiptoeing around about, that I mentioned last week, noticing that behavior from a long time ago. It's like, whoa, I don't have to do that anymore. I can just be myself however it turns out.
Yes. Well, what I would, let me see if I can rephrase this a little bit and keep with the sentiment, but maybe change the language a little bit, right, Margaret? So what we, every time we see an identity and sidestep it, right? So what we're actually seeing is how we're controlled by ego, right? And so as we practice and get skilled at not going with the karma or not going with the ego or not going with the conditioned reaction, then we strengthen our ability to be present. And it does give us a sense of confidence. It's like I practice the, you know, backstroke a lot and I get lots of feedback and I get good at doing the backstroke. So I'm confident when they ask me to do the backstroke, right?
Yeah.
There's a way in which I practice that, and so I feel clear and confident in that ability. And part of what we're training to be is to be here, right? And so there's a certain sense of presence that we can embody as we practice that facility. And what you've noticed is that feeling of confidence, let's just say, of being able to be present to something, you can see the places in which you are controlled that perhaps you're no longer controlled because you've let go of, and a certain way in which that control is asserted, and it happens to be when ego says you have to be prepared for something and you have to show up with ego, not show up in presence.
Right. And what arose with that amazing additional piece of this, which we talked about, a bunch of people mentioned last week, about how ego tells you you're not doing something right in the middle of you doing it.
That's right. Yeah. And then there's that confusion, right? Okay.
Yes,
well, am I not? Yeah.
I know. And I could just go back to this scary, scary feeling of having, of sort of hearing that and believing it right in the middle of doing something that needed my attention.
And then to be able to redirect the attention and go, wait a minute. Who says so, right?
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Let me be present to what I'm doing, which is what I'm doing, not what you're saying I'm not doing.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Margaret. Carol and then Jan and Sarah.
Oh, hello.
Sorry. Go ahead, Sarah, and then we'll get to Carol and Jan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this has been such an amazing, amazing conversation. And, to see, it's just so uplifting to realize that you know, that there's so much beauty in the midst of all this, you know, mm-hmm. and that, you know, I keep stumbling upon this moment, you know, I'll sort of panic about the length that this is going to go on. And I just the way this process was described earlier, I can see it's ego trying to disrupt the focus and the attention to the present.
That's right.
You know, it wants to go into, well, this is going to last for whatever. And it's instead of what's happening right now.
Yes. Yes, and it's so important to see the way in which that happens, right, Sarah, because it's always true that the way, first of all, the conversation is always to get me out of the moment. Here I am, perfectly happy and astounded and in awe of the beauty that's in the moment, and so I have to get distracted by the conversation, which takes me out of the moment, which is what the conversation always does. And the shape of that conversation is so important, right? Some abstract fear, the identification with fear or with ego is, well, it's going to last forever. Do we know that? We don't. But it's so believable because those words, we're so conditioned with forever, and it's always going to be like that, and you're never going to, you know, those absolute words that completely crush us and, you know, so we're so trained to believe it that we won't do what you just did, which is to go, wait a second, right now, this is the most beautiful flower that I'm present to.
Yeah.
And that conversation is not here.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to focus on the limitation instead of, you know, I'm thinking about what someone had said, you know, the luxury of being like the people that are out and about right now are sacrificing for the rest of us, really. Like they are the ones that are sort of, you know, in some ways, like they're either experiencing the disease or they're trying to, you know, help people in various ways to overcome it. And it can be, you know, we can get so focused that I can on the, or ego on the limitation and not the gratitude for all of that. And
yes, you're saying something really important that I wanted to underline, right, Sarah? I mean, the Buddha explained it as suffering is ignorance of all that is, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not that it's a dualistic world in which the suffering exists out there, and therefore, I mean, we talked about this last time, that I should be suffering as well. It just mm-hmm. so happens that the universe can include you standing in complete gratitude for the beauty of a flower while someone else is not having that experience. But there's that way in which we're all given roles, right? My role in this whole scheme of things in this moment is to appreciate life in the form of a flower. And someone else's role in the moment might be to be struggling with life in the form of a virus.
Yeah. It's so amazing. Like part of my job is actually to talk to people that are on the front lines from my home, right? So I'm getting a glimpse into it. And what I find with each conversation is it is not the way, they are so engaged and there's so much like ingenuity and creativity and it's hard and difficult and emotionally like draining, but at the same time it just feels like this conversation, like there's so much complexity and beauty, and it's not the dark picture you would get if you just picked up the newspaper and saw, you know, this is the headline, this is the, you know, this is death,
which is the other important point, right? When we're here, I mean, we keep saying this in different ways, but when I'm here in the most challenging situation, what I have access to is life and courage and willingness and beauty and total mm-hmm. wholeheartedness in the role that I'm playing. Because what you're saying is also your experience. In the most difficult times that you've experienced, yes, it's been hard and challenging, but there's a way in which you can be totally there for it. And it's only someone who's standing outside reporting on it that is reporting something about it, maybe a projection, but is not in it and reporting from the place that people are engaged in that you are witnessing, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well,
to everyone.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being there for all those people.
Yeah.
Jan. I'm sorry, Carol, and then Jan. Carol? Okay, Jan.
Hi. Well, what the thing I love that we're all together and hearing what other people's experiences are, because it just takes me there. It takes me out of what conditioning keeps trying to get me to focus on as problems. And the main thing I've been noticing over these last several days are the undulations.
Mm-hmm.
And how extreme they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciating that. It's going back to the whole idea that this is an amazing workshop we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like because we're limited to what we can do or go or where we can go, that kind of thing, the benefit is that it's like doing an at-home workshop, which we've done, but on the long term. And
yes.
It forced me to see things, well, all of us, I guess, for what I've been hearing, but that undulations is what I'm noticing. And when I hit bottom, I have to say that what I got out of Saturday's workshop has just been been tremendously helpful,
mm-hmm.
because I record and listen to the two-handed, and I am repeatedly hearing the same thing of mm-hmm. what I need. You know, what's
mm-hmm.
needed here, not me, but what this being needs at a particular time, but it's almost always, it's very much the same, to be heard,
mm-hmm.
To be reminded, and just doing that process. We've talked about this many times, but just doing that process well, any time, but especially in the really difficult times, it's that refocusing that you and Sherry always point to. It just refocuses where the attention needs to be so that I can be, this life can be available to wherever it's needed, which is exactly
mm-hmm.
what I want.
Mm-hmm. Well, and would you say, Jan, that, you know, we think that we can only say it's an undulation because we're looking at it from outside. When I'm at the bottom, I'm at the bottom. And when I'm not at the bottom, I am wherever I am, right? And so part of what I hear you say, and perhaps you can reflect this back to me, is there's not a way. The workshop is, it's not going to be a certain way, right? That's
yeah.
what we keep coming to. Life is not the way we think it should be. And then we've got to recover from it when it's not the way it should be. Life is how it is, and awareness practice is how I get to see how I am with whatever life is, and I am going through it. I am going through it with this human being, wherever this human being is, in whatever the circumstance, and that's what makes it this life, the life of this human being, right? It's not an abstraction. And
right.
So when what I get to do, and this is what we were referring to in the last group, is whether it's, you know, the circumstances are going well or the circumstances are not going well, or I'm identified or disidentified, I do the same thing, which is pull out my recorder and do whatever practices that I've trained myself to do to get here. And that's the way I have a very rich life, right? A life of a workshop where I get
yeah.
to have every experience and I get to be with every experience and I get to be here for every experience.
Yes, and I think it's being here for every experience that is for me the main lesson, not just being here, accepting, acknowledging and accepting no matter what's going on. And I can see that there's been an, I was going to say an underlying belief that that's not possible, but that's where conditioning comes in. So it's a deeper level of conditioning that's had me believe that my even that my experience tells me that's not possible, and I'm seeing that that's just another lie. It's just another lie.
Yes, and so the tools that you saw in the workshop is acknowledge and accept, because if I have to be here, that's being here is acknowledging and accepting, right? And to watch the belief that denies that as a possibility that keeps us from accepting and acknowledging every experience and every feeling, right? And I think that's what you're pointing to see how that operates, and that keeps you from being here, and that if you pick up the recorder and acknowledge and accept what is here, you're here.
Yeah. And I think it's I really appreciate what Jen had pointed to, that it's those tiny, I want to say tiny points, those subtle points where the choice is made. And I think for me, it's what I got out of what she was saying and what my experience has been, when what I'm trying to point to is that I'm getting to see the more subtle places where that choice is made. And it's not that it's right or wrong. It's that when I get to a certain point, I made an assumption, or I went, I listened to a voice without even realizing it.
Yeah.
And this workshop is really helping to fine-tune that. It's to fine-tune the seeing, getting to know.
Yeah, we're seeing on more subtle and subtle levels, right? Because a thought is very, very nuanced. If I can be there for a thought, I'm paying really close attention.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you to everybody for all the sharing.
Thanks, Jen. Carol, are you back? I guess not. Anyone else?
This is Michael.
Michael.
Ashwini. I'm really enjoying this, and grateful for so many opportunities to get together all the time. And I'm looking at scheduling under this new regime that we're in, that's working from home and shelter in place. And it's kind of like, my work hours are relatively fixed. I mean, they were before, and they are now. And outside of that, there's a feel of like, sort of being on vacation or being free, or and so in a sense I've kind of taken advantage of that, gone for hikes in the evening that I never would have done before. And so what I noticed is there's not a real structure yet, and so sometimes I go to bed later or get up later. And so even though, like, the work hours haven't changed that much, some of the supports that I usually draw on more of a more regular schedule are not there. And so sometimes I notice there's a little bit of feeling sort of stressed or not taking care of myself in the usual ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like being, as I'm talking, it's like I'm being thrown into a whole new environment, like I'm floating in space, and I don't have the normal tangible habits or routines, that supported me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, looking at all that and really great to see it with curiosity and not with, what's the matter with you? And, why can't you get it together and all that?
Yeah. Well, so many things about that, Michael. The first thing I heard you say is some things are fixed, but other things are variable. And they're variable because it's not the same time, right? So one of the great opportunities we have is exploration, as you said, being curious about what were really structures that supported me and what aren't, what still serves me, and what can I recreate in order to support myself, right? There's an opportunity. It's not, we don't want ego coming in and saying all structures of support are out of the window and there's free for all and we do everything that we want to do kind of thing. But there's also that place of, okay, well, there's a shift in circumstances or a shift in the shape of something. And when that happens, all kinds of things come loose. And we get to explore. Okay, so I enjoy going for a hike. And if I'm not suffering, if I stay up 30 minutes longer than I did before, because I can sleep in 30 minutes longer than I did before, then, let me enjoy that, right?
Yeah.
There is that temptation to, it can go both ways based on our karma, right? So if we hate structure, the ego can come in and say, throw all the structure out of the door and, out of the window, and let's just do whatever we want to do. And there are some of us who use structures as crutches, and we're not actually free, but we won't actually know if we're free if we don't explore moving those structures around to seeing what arises when that happens.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. And what I'm seeing as you're talking is that it's really just a new opportunity to look at life through a new lens, not of my choosing, not good, not bad, but the structures have shifted, and how do I want to respond to that?
Right. Yes, exactly so. Yeah, so, it would never occur to me to go for a hike at noon or to sit at 3:30, and it feels odd. But does it feel odd because, why does it feel odd? Is it because it's unfamiliar and therefore uncomfortable? Right? We get to explore that also.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's a tremendous practice opportunity because, everything has shifted, and from another perspective, nothing has shifted, nothing has changed, and there's a tremendous practice supports, from the morning show to open air to these virtual groups to the workshops on the weekend. It's nonstop, and when I add to all of that, nothing wrong, no self-hate, it's really very freeing.
It is. It is. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I get to say, is that so? A lot.
Is that so? Yes, yes, yes. All right. Thanks, Ashwini. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Michael.
Laura?
Laura.
I feel like what I've been looking at is being in a place where I feel like I've been pretty identified, and it's kind of like sort of coming in and out of consciousness. It's like I get pretty miserable, I do some recording, I do some practice, I feel better, then I get kind of miserable again. And I don't know, the thing that's been coming up is I kind of feel like it feels like it's like not working, quote unquote, it's like I'm not getting the result that I want of like staying in not suffering. But kind of in that place of like, I'm just going to keep practicing because I know eventually it'll come together. It'll,
So, Laura, do you see that staying in that place of non-suffering is part of the process?
Hmm. like the desire for that, you mean?
Right. That I don't know. I'm asking the question. It was a clarifying question. Apologies for the lack of skill around that. But so what I heard you say is so you notice you're miserable. You record. There's a way in which you come back here. You're not identified, and then the identification happens, right? Mm-hmm. And so I project, and I don't know if this is your experience, that there is some belief operating that somehow it needs to be different. Somehow you stay disidentified all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And that right. I'm having the wrong experience. I should be enjoying this workshop.
Right. Yeah, which is why I asked if it's part of if you did a process map, that would be part of it, right? Because as we were talking with Jan, if I'm identified, I'm with that. If I'm recording, mm-hmm. I'm with that. If I'm disidentified, I'm with that. You have to mm-hmm. become someone who's looking at that process and saying, that's not the right process, rather than just being with how it is, right?
Yeah, it's like I think on the Saturday workshop this last weekend, they were talking about, I think it was there, like when there's no opposite, when there's no like parallel reality that I should be having, you know?
That's right. mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly so. And for me, when you have such a powerful insight like you're having, which is I'm miserable, I record, I get disidentified, and I'm seeing this belief that there's a world that in which I don't oscillate between identification and disidentification, the thing I would do is to step back one more step and go, how do I want to train with that?
Hmm.
Where do I want to train? Where do I want to start paying more attention, start to make more recordings, pay attention to process mapping that part of this process? Is it at the place where how do I become miserable? Do I know how I become miserable? What am I listening to between the time that I finish my recording and wake up to misery, right? Because knowing mm-hmm. that process doesn't interrupt the process unless I become the practitioner who can look at that and go, I'm now very, very interested in how I go from being a happy person to being miserable and not knowing that I've gotten there until I wake up and go, I'm miserable.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I sort of watch myself get miserable. It's like I watch myself, and it feels like there's sort of I think part of what is happening is it's like I record and listen. I'm like, okay, there's clarity, there's acceptance. But then I think what's kind of coming in is like, and now that we see it, now we're going to fix it, you know. Now we're going to do all the practices that we haven't been doing. We're going to stop doing all these things that aren't helpful. We're going to, you know.
Right. And so then how do you train with that, right? Because you're present mm-hmm. enough to see that conversation. And mm-hmm. it's what Jen was talking about. That little thing that keeps leaching the energy until you wake up finding yourself miserable. So the way you're paying attention, the way you're bringing mm-hmm. this into awareness can let you know where you want to interrupt the process, right? So you record, mm-hmm. you pick up the recorder again. As soon as you hear the voice that says, now you're feeling great, now you do all of the practices, you pick up the recorder and talk again, right, to come back mm-hmm. to hear. And then you'll see what comes in next to make you feel miserable. So you pick up the recorder, and at some point, you interrupt the process, right? Because you're mm-hmm. constantly recording and feeling here rather than listening to a conversation that makes you miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the distinction, like it's a nice distinction to remember the like training with this versus like fixing it. You know.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Because I project that fixing it is the process that controls you, right? You mm-hmm. can't have identifications and disidentifications. You can't go through your life having whatever feeling you're going through your life.
you have to fix yourself and your life in order to be this perfect abstract thing that meets some vague standard of perfection, or there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and just to see that that whole goal is made up, you know. But
yeah, it is part sort of like a larger. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is made up.
Yeah, that sort of, I don't need to, it's like sort of holds us like, you know, emotionally flatlining us, sort of like, that would be great. We could just do that. Mm-hmm. That would definitely make you perfect, you know.
Right. Well, and we start to recognize those things, right, Laura, because that's the conditional bamboozle. If X, then Y, right? I don't need to, as soon as I can identify it and label it as what it is, I don't have to give it any attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in it that I need to see anymore. Once I've seen that it's just a conditioned process.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Pasha.
Hey, Pasha.
Hi. I'm so grateful to be a part of this group and be able to participate with Sangha. And I resonate a lot with previous callers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for being part of this group. We're grateful you could be part of it.
Yeah. It's a time of adjusting and mm-hmm. Discovering new ways to participate and new schedule and new structures. I see how conditioning is trying to use every opportunity to kind of insert itself into into my schedule, but
and
the same
that
time,
it's so amazing, right, Pasha, that you can see mm-hmm. how conditioning is attempting to interfere with your schedule.
Yes, and also it's opportunity to see, recognize, and go with what my heart desire. And I made this recording, you know, his, you know, what my heart desire. And it was such a freeing new feeling of like, oh, wow, I can actually express it. You know, I can be with that. And mm-hmm. and it's acceptable. You know, somehow before I made this recording, it was kind of like not allowed. You know, there is no time or no opportunity or possibility to look at what actually my heart desires.
Mm-hmm.
But,
So may I reflect that, Pasha? I think what you're saying is, if we're in a conversation about whatever, right, the conversation that says, well, there's no time to look at what your heart desires, this is how it's going to be, you're being controlled by that conversation. And so we recognize the conversation attempting to control us, and you pick up the recorder and you actually express what your heart's desire is, then we've just got the energy back, right? That
yeah.
now I'm not listening to a conversation that says it's not possible or I don't have time. I've actually expressed what it is that I want, and it's out in conscious awareness. I can see it. I know what it is. I've been with it, and I can actually choose it because it's gone from not allowed to here.
Yeah, that was the question part of the workshop we're doing on a privileged environment. And one of the items on recording, I don't remember how it came up, but it was such a novel question for me to hear. It's like, oh, wow, actually, it's possible to say it. It's possible to be with that and bring mm-hmm. awareness to, because it's kind of like the life is busy and, you know, he's this thing and he's that thing, and conditioning is filling up all the time, and, mm-hmm. and there is no time left to, mm-hmm. you know, to look at such a simple question. Mm-hmm. But bringing awareness to it is so freeing, and it feels like allowing for the heart to express. And it's such a new freedom I'm discovering to, you know, with my recorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be able to cut through the conditioning and use the recorder in order to ask a very simple question. And I think the point that you're making is just so important, that when we bring it into awareness, it's not in conditioning land, right? So anything in awareness
yes.
feels so wonderful and so freeing.
Yes. And what else I see, so about the, you know, changes in schedule and all the routines is, oh, here's the opportunity to express my heart. You know, like, let's make a schedule. Let's make a schedule however, my heart desires. And with that, leaves no time and opportunity for conditioning to insert itself. And it becomes... it almost becomes easier transition because, you know, here was the one step was, you know, looking at, you know, what would be good to support everyone in, you know, in the household or in the family. And then time is filled and it feels good and it's done that's the end of the story, and there is no more conversations I needed about it, and that's it.
Right. Well, here's what I hear you say, Pasha, slightly differently, where if conditioning was allowed to make the schedule, then what you desire and what you care about and Pasha's near and dear are not part of the schedule. Like, conditioning uses it, mm-hmm. conditioning completely fills it up. So if we
yes.
go from the heart's perspective and make a schedule with the mentor or with conscious, compassionate awareness, then what there's no room for is conditioning. So it's a happy, happy scheduling process.
Yes, yes. And what's left is this kind of nagging sensation, but there is no time for me, you know. And what I saw, who is that me, is that ego, you know, left alone
mm-hmm.
without much room for it, because the schedule is packed.
What a lovely practice. Schedule the ego out of the schedule. Don't put the ego on the schedule.
Yes, yes. And it's simple, it's freeing, and we can use this, change as opportunity to look from the heart and make a new choices, because the old choices suddenly became not available, but ego has not yet claimed the new ground. So
right.
it's easier, it seems like from my experience, it's easier to do what we want. What do we really want?
What a good point, Pasha. I think that's why Sherry always says mix things up, right? Because when things are changing, then you have to pay more attention, and ego is on the defensive, because part of what keeps us asleep is the same. It lulls us into the sameness of things, and that sort of ossifies, right? But what you're pointing to is when everything shifts, when everything is up in the air, then ego hasn't yet claimed its ground. So we have the opportunity, if we are proactive, to be able to come from a place of center and practice and create a schedule that works for us. And of course, you know, ego will attempt to claim it, because it's always three beats behind life, but at least you have a head start.
Yes. Ego is the sameness. It's a kind of like a stuck in a rut. But when there is a new beginnings, here we have openings to step ahead of ego and make a new choices that support this being, support everyone, you know. And I see how the even community is more supported and responded. We're going, because we can't go far, we're walking around the block just to have like a little bit of time outside and seeing the neighbors, you know, sitting in their garages and people who are like, who we never saw before, like in the neighborhood, and it feels like participating even without much contact, but it feels like we're in this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, everything is a possibility, right?
Yeah.
Not circumscribed by what used to be the sameness of the ego in a previous and sort of circumstances.
Yes.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pasha.
Ashwini?
Yes.
This is Sequoia.
Hey, Sequoia.
Hey. I just want to share an experience that I had that stemmed from, I'm having, that stemmed from the Saturday workshop we did.
Uh-huh.
At one point, I can't even remember what the assignment was, but it was to go outside. I walked into the garden, and I had such a direct experience of being in heaven.
Mm.
My socks were knocked off, you know. It was like so clear that heaven was present right here.
Mm.
And
you were present to heaven.
And I was here. Present to heaven.
Or here was heaven that we were present here, to. We could say it so many different ways, right, Sequoia?
Yes. And I, you know, it was such a gift because, you know, there'd been, I've been having, like everybody else, all kinds of experiences with what's going on. And then to just stand there in heaven and realize that it was that shift of attention, just suddenly, you know, I went from concern and worry and, you know, conditioned mind to heaven.
Mm.
And what is, as since that time, I have been feeling very, very held in love by the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
I can't put it into words, but it's like there's just such a palpable presence of love.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I don't know if this is your experience, but being here is, we often say, right, that the experience of being here is loving or feeling loved,
mm-hmm.
or it is love.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a way that we are cared for, and we can experience that no matter what the circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in spite of the circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that there's a benevolence even in, if I may use the word, there's a benevolence in our surroundings, even if it has some terrifying aspects.
Hmm. How interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's my favorite story in Indian mythology, right? That in the
in one of the epics, the god in the form of Krishna comes and talks to the prince who's his best friend, and he shows himself as everything in life, everything that is terrifying and everything that's beautiful. And Arjuna closes his eyes and says, go back to being my friend, because I can't see all of you. I can only see the aspect of you that's friendly. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always struck me that life is of all forms and all of it. And, you know, it shows itself to us in all forms.
In all forms.
Yeah, in its benevolent and non-benevolent form, and yet that place of, at some level, I'm part of all this, right? That's why I feel embraced.
Because
I'm not separate from it. I'm held because I am, at some level, it is me.
Yes, just being connected in that, connected to that, being held, and, projecting, just that projection, I look around and there is just the trees, the sky, all of it just standing I just project, unaffected by all of what is going on this other level.
Yes, there's nothing going on with them, right?
There's not a thing going on with them.
Exactly. It's a true experience.
There's just not a thing going on with them, And except loving.
Yeah.
It seems to be. So anyway, it's just,
we're in touch with in that way that we talk about, that when we project that outward, it's what's going on for us. So there is a way in which, if I'm in touch with it, I'm worried or concerned. Like if I bring awareness to that, we can sense that that's the ego process that's happening to me. And then when I shift my attention to an expanded awareness of heaven, that's what's also here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we get called to that larger place, we can see that everything is going on in the context of nothing going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And in some way we can hold all of it in that okayness.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel held.
And we're being held. And I just, I've just been reminded too of that. It's like my eyes got open to something, and something's been changed in it, and it's not, let's see, and it's just been there to draw on since then.
It's a holy process, right? It's almost alchemical. Here I am, Hwari. I got drawn into heaven, and heaven showed me something, right? And therefore, that it transformed something.
It
and
did.
Now that's all that's available for me.
Yeah. And it just feels like it can't be 100% lost. It's just there as part of the experience of the human. And
it sounds also, it's our experience is that the more that I am in touch with it, the more it's there for me, because what I have my attention on grows. Availability is also a result of having practiced attending to it.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. It's so great to be on the call and to just have this experience of being in group with lots of folks.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
Thank
really,
you, Sequoia.
It's another being in heaven. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, another being in heaven. Thank you.
Anna. Hi. There's so many threads and clues in this discussion that have just kind of come together and been helping me see something, which is, so I've been noticing a lot of identification with conditioned mind. And what I've been noticing is this old form of ego controlling the attention that hasn't felt like it's been a strong form of control for a while and has kind of been triggered in a strong way. And it's to do with like something like, how can you be here, capital H here, and all right when this is happening? It's like one of those child thoughts, like, how can you be all right when that person isn't all right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity that in that way of transformation way is that, because the insight that came with that is that whenever I'm here at the monastery and capital H here in this heaven, in the sense of surrounded by all this beauty and this privilege, that it's always going on that there are wars and that there are people dying of starvation. That's always so, right? That it's all included in the experience of humanity, the world. And and so it feels like the opportunity in that way of transformation way is to have that some layer stripped. So one way that comes up to try and describe it is the difference between ignorance and presence. So in other mm-hmm. words, for all of that to be not to have me being able to be present dependent on anything being shut out or ignored. Does that hang together?
Yes. If I may rephrase it, right? That very childish, as you said, thought of how can you be okay when and everyone else is not okay is just a giant, it's such a giantly or grossly egocentric process, right?
Right.
Because it denies that you are here in beauty and privilege, and
yep.
you can be completely present and enjoying that. And so that's
yep.
included. And in a non-separate reality, you're also suffering hideously. Wherever you're suffering hideously. And that's
yeah.
also included. But it's only that orientation that says you shouldn't be whatever that's so separate and actually turns the entire inclusiveness on its head. Because inclusiveness implies that you can be in pure enjoyment in this moment and
yep.
experiencing whatever suffering is being experienced elsewhere. And it's all of it.
Yeah.
You are all of it.
Right. There's something that Thich Nhat Hanh poem about being all of it.
Yes. Yes. Right? That to recognize that it's what, I mean, we've talked about on this group and with Cherry so many times that, yes, we learn the skill of being able to eat while someone else is screaming.
Yes.
With starvation. But yep. there isn't anything that is required of us to, I mean, if I'm here and I'm having this experience, then wonderful. Let me have this experience totally. To allow something to rob me of that experience by that belief that, first of all, not true, and is only meant to make you feel bad, we don't need to give any attention to that. Because, and you know, and I think that comes from also we're so conditioned to want to feel good, right? The good person thing to do is to feel the suffering of other people, but not at the cost of being present.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
I know there's a lot more, but I think we're at time, so we're going to defer the exploration shortly complete.
Yeah, definitely I'm going to listen to the recording because I can feel the level of unclarity, if that makes sense. There's awareness of the, like, unclarity.
Yeah. We took several leaps in that last exchange, so if we had more time, we'd have parsed through it or stepped through it more. So,
yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, everybody. Gassho.
Thank you. Gassho.
Thank you.
Gassho.